This is the new era. This is the new band, and we're unbreakable.
We can rebuild him. We have the technology. We can make him better than he was. Better, stronger, faster. Actually, better, stronger,
faster.
Is that
a line from Starship Troopers or something?
No, it's actually the Million Dollar Man.
It's $6 Million Man. I know that, and
I don't even know what that is.
We Brits don't do excitement, so this is the best you're going to get.
Chris is bringing the noise today, apparently.
Speaking of vanilla...
It's just, I don't understand why.
I don't think anyone does. I don't think Travis Green understands.
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust. This is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com and CKNW.com. Here they are, the best starting lineup to never wear a C, Chris, Anna, Matt, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, now heard on Overtime Media. This is Chris at Light Force. Join in the small hot box where we are getting naked because it is hot. Is the kind of bewildered Matt Lee at Matt Lee 61, which I kind of find odd because this is the guy that shows up in, like, you know, bike shorts regularly. Like, that's like only like one level above being like wearing nothing. Like, it shows everything. So the fact that we're embracing the hot box today should not be a surprise. We've got Adam Ovenel Carter at Adam FOC and Anna Forsyth, Eddie Forsyth 03. And yes, we're all getting naked. It's so hot.
It does kind of feel like the Ace Ventura rhino in here sometimes.
Oh, God, yes. That's not a great image, but yeah. Neither is Matt in bike shorts.
I think it looks great.
I think I look great, too. Thank you. I wore gray shorts. I would just like to say, if something were to happen, like if the Canucks and Quinn Hughes were playing, these are not ideal viewing shorts.
Well, that's a good thing that we are not watching any hockey games.
It's a good thing it's not game day. Speaking of which, there's only 3 games left in the season, if you can believe that.
Wow.
Mercifully.
The season's almost done for us? That's a stretch.
I know. Someone at work asked, she was like, I should go to a game soon. And I said, well, there's 3 left, 1 at home, and I wouldn't if I were you.
I was contemplating going to tomorrow's game versus San Jose. Is it not must watch? Like, can I watch Quinn Hughes next season and I'll be okay?
Yeah, he's worth seeing.
You know, I was disappointed that Quinn did not play in the Anaheim game. I would have liked to have seen Hughes myself.
Yeah, he was special.
Yeah, That game was kind of weird. Like, there was, you know, the Canucks looking to lose, the Canucks looking to try to come back. It was, like, all sorts of everything.
That was a weird game. That was a fun one, just because it was so weird.
Yeah. Anyhow, what's new and exciting in everyone's world? Anna got a hug from Baby Force.
I did. It was adorable.
Yeah.
Spring break's over, so back to the grind.
Adam's actually doing something for once.
Yeah, back at work. That's why we're late today. So,
yeah. Well, the patrons know we're late. Those who are listening after the fact, they're just thinking we're on time.
That's fair.
Yeah.
I ruined it. Spoiled it.
Mm-hmm. Broke that, what was it, the third wall? What's it called?
Fourth wall.
I don't know.
I don't know any of the walls. I'm just going to put it out there. I don't know what you guys are talking about.
Do not recognize walls and boundaries.
I know walls. Oh, well, I don't recognize boundaries, though.
Yeah, ask Adam about that one.
Oh, I don't have any anyway.
I don't think
we're all wearing shorts.
You. Yeah.
Well, Anna's wearing it.
Is it a romper or a dress?
It's a dress.
Well, yeah, okay.
It's kind of like shorts.
Primark's finest.
I left my flower print dress at home.
Primark's a great store.
I know. I miss it.
Yeah.
It's great. I'm going to go there in the summer.
Britain's finest contributions to society.
What, yeah. Not Marks and Spencer's?
No, because Marks and Spencer's expensive.
I don't know. British.
It's Marks and Sparks used to be here, and now they're not.
You didn't know Marks and Spencer's was British?
I thought you meant like Marks Work Warehouse and Spencer's.
No.
I've never heard of Marks and Spencer's.
Oh, yeah. Okay, let's get back on
track. Okay.
Big store.
We are already off the rails.
Okay, fine. What are we going to be talking about this episode, Matt?
Quinn Hughes? Can we talk about Quinn Hughes? Is it still too late to talk more about Quinn Hughes?
Never.
Are you asking for a friend?
No, I'm asking for me. Did everybody watch his debut?
Yeah, I was
watched
there.
Them both.
He was okay.
You were there.
I think this is the first time in a very long time this season that I've actually rewatched portions of a game several times. Like, I practically know that overtime by heart.
That and his assist as well, yeah. I'm with you on that.
Yeah. Oh, honestly, like, in the first period, in the end of the first period when he just carried it out of the zone, I was just like, oh, that was just, like, the moment where I was like, okay, this is going to be good.
Yeah, if you weren't in Discord when Hughes got that apple, let me tell you the gifts that Matt shared, inappropriate.
Definitely.
I already forgot what some of them look like. Can I go
no.
back?
No,
can I go
no,
back?
No, no, no.
Well, you can go back, but don't be resharing them.
No, I can't go back. Game Day Channels deleted it.
Oh, that's too
Thank
bad.
Thank God.
I'm pretty sure there was one of a gushing fountain.
Oh, you know we don't need to relive it.
It was like the Hoover Dam exploding.
God.
Gush is a gross word. That should be an OTR one time. Just the grossest words.
What, yeah.
Like moist?
More moist.
I don't have a problem with moist.
But gush.
I hate
gush. Gush and gash. It's pretty bad, too.
What's wrong with gash?
Okay.
Well, we got
also,
here.
Can I just say for any British listeners, it got X-rated.
Oh, really? Is that another British term? Oh, I didn't know that. Sorry.
Yeah, let's move on.
Yeah, that's...
I apologize.
We need an OTR where there's like words that mean one thing here and a whole different world of things outside. Well, there's Quinn Hughes. What else is going on? I don't know. I mean,
okay, we'll talk about this as well. But I know Adam has a bone to pick with Alex Ether getting all the minutes in the world, despite the fact that there is no meaning to any of these games rest of season. A little bit on maybe Travis Green heading into his fourth year as the NHL head coach of the Vancouver Canucks, whether or not he's on the hot seat as well. Other things we'll be talking about is the ramifications if Roberto Luongo calls it a career. Of course, a lot of scuttlebutt seems to be that he may not pass a physical next year if the Florida Panthers were to sign Sergei Bobrovsky. Talking about all those things coming up here on the C4 podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Should we go to rewind first?
Sure.
Because I want to go back to Quinn Hughes.
Is there enough Quinn Hughes to go around?
No, there's not enough Quinn Hughes. Okay, we'll lead off this discussion quickly by saying, is Quinn Hughes a legitimate Calder Trophy candidate heading into next year?
Absolutely.
Yep.
I don't think that would be at all in doubt.
I mean, it's him or his brother would be a fun race, hey?
There's got to be some other potential candidates here, though.
Well, there would be, but again, to that point, you know, both candidates from the same team will just be next level.
Oh, my God.
Wouldn't that be insane?
Well, imagine the gifts we'd be seeing in Discord from Matt if that actually was the case.
Okay, just to take us off the rails for a little second.
Again.
When the Sedins debuted for the Canucks in the 2000 season, Chris, you can back me up on this one, because Adam wasn't born yet, pretty much. But when the Sedins debuted in 2000, was anybody talking Calder Trophy for either of them?
Well, no.
Are you saying Calder?
He's saying Calder.
Calder, I know. I was told there'd be no math.
To answer your question, they actually, I don't think, were ever even considered to be in the mix for the Calder Trophy. I mean, for the first few years of their career, they were the two soft Sedins, the Swedish twins. And even though they were putting up some seriously good numbers, I required one or the other to be injured for a significant period of time before they actually got credit as a player, because if they both happened to be on the ice, it was an immediate 50% discount to their effort because there's two of them.
Right.
Like, the math does not add up. Apparently, oh, well, they're only as good as each other on the ice. And yet we saw when both Hank and Daniel decided to go and win themselves some trophies, it didn't take both of them to be around for an extended period of time. Anyhow, I digress. To answer your question, no, they weren't in the mix. Quinn Hughes is in a different level. No different than sort of Pettersson for this season. And Besser, you know, short of his injury last year.
Let me ask you about this, though, Adam. Calder Trophy candidates, does Cale Makar factor in at all?
Absolutely.
Assuming that he turns pro, of course.
He's one of those guys that's always in the conversation with the best prospects outside the NHL right now. And, you know, if he decides to turn pro and play, which I'm sure he will, or if he's not already, I don't think he is.
No, his season's still on.
It is, yeah, okay. Then, yeah, he absolutely has a chance. He's a great player. Who knows? It'd be a fun race between those two guys because they're always linked in the same conversation. But, yeah, I don't see why not.
You're way too soon, Calder? Calder?
Calder.
Sorry. Jesus. I was told there'd be no math. Candidates for next season would be the Hughes brothers and Cale Makar.
They're probably the top three, I would say.
Yeah.
Maybe Martin Nakash if he gets in there for Carolina.
Yeah, or Capo Caco could have a Lion-A-like season, you know?
Yeah, I'd say if you were to rattle off three or five names, it would be those five in some order.
Yeah, for sure.
Remember when Casey Mittelstadt was supposed to be a Calder Trophy candidate?
Calder, yeah.
Yeah, can you stop? Just stop saying it.
Okay,
then...
let me do this one more time. Calder.
There you go.
Calder. Okay. Goldstar. Whew.
He's going to say it Calder.
And they say that journalists don't get pronunciations right. Calder. Calder Trophy.
I've even forgotten what we're talking about. Oh, Casey Middleton. Yeah, that was a while ago.
For like a hot second?
Yeah.
Anyway, getting back on the Quinn Hughes train, does he automatically get PP1 minutes as early as next season to start? I mean, we're talking...
He's freaking better.
I mean, he should be getting PP1 minutes right now.
Yes.
We don't want to ruin the F word.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, spoiler alert, he should be getting the minutes over Edler.
Is he automatically already the best defenseman on the lineup? In the lineup? Like, no, in terms of talent?
Well, offensive talent, yeah, I don't think it's close. I would say Tanev is probably the best defenseman on the team. But, I mean, who knows until Hughes overtakes him.
Yeah, and I think Edler's still the best defenseman.
Edler?
In franchise
Okay, in
history.
Franchise history, maybe. But right now, Chris Tanev is a better player than Alex Edler, I think. Obviously not as offensively inclined as Quinn Hughes. But.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this question. You mentioned this a little bit, defensively, Quinn Hughes' game. What do you think of his game defensively? From what we've seen in the first two games.
It looked pretty good. I mean, he had one in his first game. He had one rookie kind of mistake where he let a guy get around him. What are you doing?
Yeah, stop playing with Adam's stick there, okay?
I'm fixing his microphone.
Okay, anyway, he got walked by, I think, Dustin Brown, I think, one point in his first game. But he made the point after the game that because he's always been a smaller guy, he's had to use his stick, and he uses his stick really, really well and can direct guys to the corner. Make passes they don't want to, poke the puck away. So, I mean, obviously a really small sample size, but there's no reason to worry. And I don't want to jump ahead too much, but this touches on his offensive game as well. There's just been no real learning curve for him in these two games. He looks totally at home offensively and defensively, and that's amazing to me for a 19-year-old defenseman.
I'd agree with that. I think the thing is with his defensive game, you don't want to notice it. That's the key difference between the, like, his notice me moments have all been him showing up offensively, and then those, say, yeah, that one with Dustin Brown. So the fact that we can't really pick out any more moments, I think, shows that he's comfortable at NHL level, which is really impressive in this short space of time.
Well, it is a short space of time, though.
Yeah, I know. Small sample size, but, like, that's all we have to work with.
Yeah, no, I agree. I just wonder if what we're watching right now is going to be a fair assessment. I think next season is when we'll have a much better idea. But, you know, and again, we also have to consider that for some reason or another, the Vancouver Canucks have determined that they are a spoiler team and want to win games still. So they've seemingly, as a team, picked up their slack by getting the Jags all fired up.
Last thing on Quinn Hughes before we take a break and we'll get into the F word. But I was thinking about this while I was watching Jim Hughes and Ellen Hughes in the stands. Of course, they were at the debut game last week. Is there anything to be said about Quinn Hughes and the Hughes brothers, for that matter, growing up in a hockey-oriented family? Like, the way that Jim Hughes even talks to the media about Quinn Hughes' game is far more advanced than any sort of player's parent on the Canucks. Like, you know, we saw Elias Pettersson's dad sort of become a something of a star, if you will, or at least like something of a
meme.
Torbjorn.
A meme, yes. Like, he stole the show, but like the way Jim Hughes talks to the media, it's like he can break down Quinn Hughes' game, his strengths, his weaknesses in a heartbeat. And so what I'm trying to get at is, does it give a little bit of added value to Quinn Hughes' game when you grow up with hockey parents like that, when it's ingrained in your everyday life for the first 18 years of your life?
Absolutely. I think, you know, you see these hockey playing families, the Sutters, the Stahls, like they're like that for a reason, right? It's not just luck that you have these crazy families. So if your first two kids are Jack and Quinn Hughes, or in the other order, then you're doing something right, right? Mm-hmm. So,
and I say this too because we saw those stories with Luke Shen when he was making his debut with Toronto back in 2008, and even when he was making his debut, they heard about these eight and 10-year-old kids who were lighting it up in Toronto at the time, and of course it was Quinn and Jack Hughes. Like, these guys have been talked about since they were like crawling on the ice, essentially, and so it's been part of their game on an everyday basis for the last 10 or so years. And so having those kind of parents to mold your game is pretty important.
Yeah, I think because there's the one thing of hockey DNA, but I think a much bigger part is just knowing what it takes to make it, right? Like, we've talked about Quinn Hughes' size, so he's had to be a smarter player. And I'm sure his dad and his mom were the ones saying, you know, like, be a smarter like guy, this is how you'll have to play because you don't have the size. So I'm sure they have that kind of wisdom.
Quick off the rails, Bo Horvat's dad, Tim, he's the clear captain of the fathers, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Jim Hughes is going to make a statement, though, for alternate status, I think.
Yeah,
especially just having two kids on that team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe three.
The back on rails, though, Luke Shen. I think it would be remiss of us not to mention that Luke Shen seems to have accepted his role as protector, mentor, you know, guy on the other side really well. Like, we had talked on the last episode that Luke should be back next season. He's going to be back for a good price. Seems to be doing that particular role quite well. Having watched him, any doubt about this? Do you think he actually kind of now is working himself to get a raise?
Yeah, he'll get a raise.
A raise, very slightly.
Yeah, nothing crazy. Yeah. It'll be a small, totally reasonable deal. But he's proven so far to be a totally adequate, serviceable player, which is more than you could ask for from a sixth or seventh guy.
And the fact that we're wanting someone to just do something when our star players get roughed up.
Right, yeah, so the locker room aspect is great as well.
What about the Hits King, MDZ?
Well, he's the new MDC.
Yeah.
He's the new Hits King.
Except this is the guy that I wouldn't say is the new MDC, is the better upgraded MDC. I mean, ultimately,
with a better haircut.
Yeah. Well, we talk about Luke Shen as the 6'7". I'd argue that he's actually made himself the 5'6".
Yeah, I can get on board with that.
Bottom pairing guy.
Yeah, bottom pairing guy.
Yeah.
But when we say 6'7", we're talking about the Bulldogs of the team. Luke Shen, in my mind, he's now, you know, played himself into a...
Is he ahead of Biega on your depth chart then?
Yeah. I like Biega 7, but I'd have Shen as my 5-6.
Yeah, I can't think of a time off the top of my head where I've seen Shen make an egregious mistake. I you know, he had that play shorthanded where he almost scored against LA or Dallas. I don't remember. But, like, I've seen him do more good than bad, and that's always what you want out of your defenseman.
Yeah, especially in that bottom pair. It's just the reliable
players
that can eat enough minutes to get your top two pair back out.
You talked about a pay raise, and I'm fine giving Luke Shen a pay raise. I think it was like, he was on like $1 million, his cap hit. I can't remember. Someone can look it up. But I think the biggest thing that Luke Shen wants is he wants his next contract to be a one-way deal. And we saw his story talked about on Hockey Night in Canada this weekend about how he was sent down to San Diego from the Anaheim Ducks, playing in the AHL. He had to drive 90 minutes to and from place to place because he lived somewhere along like...
Well, I guess near a...
Like a 90-minute drive to San Diego, and that was hard for him and his family. He credits Dallas Eakins for allowing him to do the things that he needed to do to get back into the NHL. I think Luke Shen is looking more for stability than a extra pay raise because he's been here for, what, 9 years, 10 years at this point. He wants to make sure that there are some sort of measures in place to make sure that he's playing in the NHL on a full-time basis. I would rather give him a one-way deal and slightly less dollars if that can happen. Like $1 million one-way deal. Let's just call it a spade, and he's playing bottom-pairing minutes. There's not very many bargains you get for that price.
How much do you think he's getting paid right now?
Isn't he getting paid like $8.95 or $8.75?
So I got $8.75, $8.95.
Whatever the vet minimum is.
I want to say $9.50.
He's getting $800,000.
See,
flat?
Flat.
If he goes to $1 million, that's fine with me.
Yeah, I
can't envision him getting much
and
more
than that.
And
I think he'd be happy with that.
1.25 or something.
Okay. Yeah.
What is that in terms of percentage of the cap? Like, it's a ridiculously small amount.
Yeah. In my mind, $1 million, give or take that $200,000. If he gets to raise a little bit more on a one-way deal, I've got no problem with that. In fact, that's sort of the money I would prefer the Canucks spend on short-term deals to fill a spot than, hey, let's go roll out a four-year contract for $2.53 to a Jag.
So Luke Shen had that kind of money or Derek Puglia?
Luke Shen. Luke Shen had any money over Derek Puglia.
Luke Shen at that money or Alex Biega?
Well, okay. I would take Luke Shen, but I think Alex Biega still has a role.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And why not? They're both cheap.
Luke Shen at his dollars, and I'm sort of jumping the gun on what we'll talk about later, or Ben Hutton at his current contract, which I think is like $2.5-3 million.
That's a tough question. I think Hutton offers more.
Yeah, agreed.
But we'll get into that.
Yeah.
Yeah. In terms of value, though, Luke Shen might be one of the better value guys if you can get him on that kind of a contract.
Yeah.
I was just counting defensemen because Toss Hutton.
We all know the best value, though, is Quinn Hughes and his entry-level deal right now.
Obviously.
Let's milk that train for all it's worth while we can.
Not a phrase.
Is the Luke Shen...
Milk that train?
Is the Luke Shen narrative getting pushed a little too hard in some ways?
Well, we're bored. It's the end of the season. There's nothing.
Yeah,
like,
are we just stretching for stories?
Yeah, and someone made a good point about Hughes too. Like, when was like Vancouver exploded over a one assist debut, whereas Matthews scored.
I know.
And that's the whole. And Vancouver's never had a guy like that. But it is kind of true. Like we're desperate for feel good stories right now. So maybe a little bit, but. Who cares?
3-3 overtime.
Give us this, you know?
Yeah. Like, they're... Yeah.
Very fast trivia. Luke Shen was drafted in which year as which Vancouver Canucks prospect? In the same draft year as which Canucks prospect? Player.
Cody Hodgson or Jordan Schrader?
I need
Jordan Schrader.
No, it's Cody Hodgson.
Dang it!
We now have two players from the 2008 draft class on the Canucks. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll get into the F word. What?
Who's the other one?
I mean, from the first round. Shen and Hodgson.
Well,
Hodgson, you said we have.
We now have two. We now have two.
We have had.
Never mind. Right. Take a break. Come back.
This guy was a journalist.
Whatever. I'm going to punch you in the face between our breaks. More C4 Podcast, CanucksHockeyBlog.com.
He liked to say the F word.
Oh, then get the f*** here then. Okay, see ya.
Oh. He's going to have the F word on it.
I wish I could give you an explanation about it. I can't.
You out of hand.
You said the F word, Dad.
You called me the F word.
Well, now that Matt has beat the living daylights out of Adam, I think it's about time, Adam.
Ow.
Wow. Like,
okay, this is what it's like every single week. They just play fight.
Yeah, you know what? We really need to get like a GoPro or something.
I don't know how much of that was play fight. Did that feel real?
You know what?
Felt like something.
Yeah. People push people over in the playground when they like them. We all know what's going on here.
Hey. You're not exactly off the hook here. You still have a Vacchio jersey, okay?
Yeah.
Where is that?
It's hanging up in my wardrobe.
It's probably like hanging up in a glass like case right now.
She's got it framed on the wall.
Like got a padlock and stuff like that.
Yeah. It says no boys allowed.
Well, Matt could still go in. Adam, time for an F word.
All right. So, Matt, you kind of wanted me to talk about Travis Green and going into his fourth year. Is he on the hot seat the same way Jim Benning is? And maybe he feels some of that heat because here we are in games 77 and 78. Okay, forget 77. Game 78 of the season. The Canucks are officially out of the playoffs at this point. And we have Alex Edler playing PP1, playing a minute 51 or a minute 45 of every power play or something like that, played 251 of overtime in a completely meaningless game. What is Travis Green coaching for these wins for? Like, who cares? I get the players want to win, but you're at home. The fans have had a terrible, terrible time. You have this incredible bright star. And I thought he did a good job with him in Hughes' first game. He let him play his game. He played him a bunch, put him out in overtime, and let the fans enjoy it, and put him second in the shootout. It was a great time for all involved. Then the second game comes around and he completely reverses that. I don't think Hughes did anything bad enough to warrant being played, I think, you know, 3 minutes in the third period, getting 12 seconds of power play time per power play. It just makes no sense to me. And Chris, you said that Green talked about it afterwards, and we can get into that. But it just drives me crazy that we're still having to deal with this. There's always a guy like a Magna or whatever. But this is the time where you have these guys where losses help your team, really. I know you don't want to coach for a loss, but who cares? Give us the entertainment aspect of a hockey game, right? So anyway.
Chris, as someone who loves like the hail of gunfire kind of losses, if that's the case, like fire wagon hockey, can you speak to this?
Well, in my mind, when is there ever a better time to allow the players to simply play? Like, this is it.
Yes, exactly.
Right? Let them make those mistakes. Like, we saw this, you know, back in the Willie D era when Goldobin in his first game does something extremely exciting. Yes, he blew the zone early. But at that time of year, it was quite clear the Canucks were not going to make the playoffs. And what happens? Willie D goes and sits him on the pine the rest of the period. He gets like a couple of minutes the rest of the game. And it's almost as if the coaches are so tied up in ensuring that there are no mistakes, low event hockey, that they forget that there is this opportunity. Like, what are you going to do? Wait till the preseason when really it's just a bunch of players looking to make a team? Let the kid have some fun. Let the players have some fun. History lesson here. Vancouver Canucks were in a tough spell during the Mark Crawford era. Mark decided to cancel practice, took the team out to play some pond hockey while in Ottawa. Team had a heck of a good time. The Canucks at that point, for some reason or another, went on a huge tear and became one of the hottest teams in the league. Why? Because I think the players just remembered that the game was about fun. And, you know, they've built chemistry from that. I think, not to suggest that we're in the same type of situation, but yeah, let Hughes out there on the first power play. Mm-hmm. Yes, Edler is the best defenseman the team has ever seen. Great. We'll have him back next year on a four-year deal with an NMC where he's paid $8 million a season or some stupid number that GM Jim Benning gives him. However, these last three games, they should all be about Hughes.
Yeah,
let the kid have his...
What does Alex Adler need to learn that he's going to learn in the next four games?
Yeah. Matt?
Hughes, Pettersson, and Besser, 5 minutes of three-on-three hockey in overtime?
I mean, I know you can't, but when they're on the ice together, it's magic. Like, the creativity.
Instantly, it was magic, too.
Yeah, the first time they were out there, it was 45 seconds. And the next game, they had 30 seconds of just making plays happen. And that's mm-hmm. something we've never really seen from this team. So why not foster that and let it grow? I just don't understand.
Yeah, I mean, Chris was talking about the pond hockey kind of recreating that hockey magic and creating that chemistry. Like, Besser and Pettersson love playing together. You can tell that on the ice. And it's clearly infectious if Quinn was able to sort of jump into that straight away. So just, like, give them what they want and give us what we want and just...
Well, to use that first overtime as an example, the three of them played together. It was almost as if they were trying to outdo each other, if that makes sense. Like, you look at, one, how fast they were. The puck was essentially, you know, glued to whomever stick it happened to be on until they, you know, threaded the needle with a pass. Like, it's unbelievable hockey. Well, give them an opportunity 5-on-5. If there's one thing that I've complained about is it's a lack of speed, and here you have an opportunity to make magic happen.
Every single time in the past two games Hughes went over the boards, the crowd went nuts. And, like, there's no way you're not hearing that. So why not give these hard luck fans something to cheer for a little more, you know?
All right. I hear you. Loud and clear.
Do you agree?
I do agree. I don't think it's crazy to suggest that Travis Green needs to be... I mean, history lesson for everybody. Like, Travis Green, this is not the first time he's made questionable playing / lineup decisions. And in a period right now where the Canucks are officially eliminated from the postseason, there's nothing more but jobs to play for. At this point, he needs to give the kids that are his future the opportunity to shine. So I do agree with you.
To that earlier question, though, is Travis Green potentially on the hot seat?
No.
We'll get into that right after this.
Take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on that.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? Is that because he was mad?
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He's going to get a lot of power play time. And, yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
Okay, so talking about your last question, Chris, just before the break, you asked, is Travis Green on the hot seat going into his fourth season with the Vancouver Canucks? We talked a lot about Jim Benning being on the hot seat as early as this offseason, which is warranted, but not a lot of people are talking about Travis Green being on the hot seat, and it seems like 4 years is quite a long time, and at some point, I think we all have to agree that there needs to be some accountability behind the bench. Do you agree that the seat's a little warm, at least, on Travis Green?
Well, I don't necessarily believe it's warm, but that's because you've got Jim Benning as the insulator. Mm-hmm. Benning's not going to get another bullet to his gut.
Yeah, he will not get another coach to his name. Right.
So as far as Benning is concerned, Green needs to be successful. Now, we'll probably get into it a little bit, but there is some rumblings that there is another name in the mix of a possible replacement for Jim Benning in the offseason. Well, you did not hear?
No.
The Ken Holland thing?
Yeah.
Ken Holland. Okay.
And
yeah, well,
now, new GM, now I would be, feet to the fire. I mean, it's quite unheard of to see a coach survive a GM.
And a GM usually wants to pick his guy, right?
Yeah, unless you're Mike Gillis, who went with AV and had success with it. But
so are you trying to say that Travis Green is safe so long as Jim Benning's here first?
Correct. I could see it. There being, let's say, sometime next season, a proverbial house cleaning.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe not Travis first, but when Gillis was gone, I mean, you could tell Tortorella's like, well, I'm done. Torts knew he wasn't coming back. And it was clear as day in his sort of end of season press conference when he just unloaded. But he knew, well, the insulating factor's gone. New guy's going to come in. They're going to go and find someone else.
However, that said, I think the circumstances leading up to John Tortorella's dismissal are far, far different than the circumstances on the screen.
But you do think the ownership, their patience, is going to wear a little thin. If we don't make the playoffs next year, which I think we've all agreed shouldn't necessarily be the ultimate goal, but I think that's what ownership
wants.
And
even if it is the goal, I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah. But I think that's what ownership wants.
Yeah, I have it on good authority. Ownership sees next season as a playoff season. Not a, we're going to be competitive and in the hunt until the end of the season. In actual, we're going to have a playoff gate that we can then build upon.
Let me ask you guys this candid question. How much of the success of, let's say, Elias Pettersson's rookie season can be attributed to Travis Green? A little, a lot, or some?
That is a good question. I think Pettersson...
we haven't talked about that too much,
no,
right?
We haven't. I think Pettersson's one of those superstar players that would succeed no matter what. And, around the trade deadline, maybe a bit before, teams started playing him like...
A lot harder.
A lot harder, obviously, because they figured him out a little bit. But also, like, he was the only guy who could score on the team, right? And, other than Horvat and Besser, that was kind of the case. So then you got to figure out a way, if you're Green, one, to help minimize his minutes, not minimize, but maximize his minutes, I should say, even if it's fewer minutes. And I don't know if he's done that.
So in other words, maximize the efficiency of the minutes that Pettersson is getting.
Yes.
In other words, when Pettersson struggled, and we'll get into Pettersson's struggles a little bit later on, one goal in 19 games, during that stretch where Pettersson has not lit the lamp as much as he has, it's on Travis Green to find opportunities, find lanes, find ways to change up Elias Pettersson's game so that he can get more scoring opportunities.
And I still think he is getting scoring opportunities. Power plays look better, and maybe just hasn't had the luck. He's still getting assists.
Mm.
One, it's just a rookie who's at the end of the season and is probably exhausted. But two, you still got to work around that.
And at the same time, though, Pettersson's struggles of late have also been Brock Besser's sort of success, if you will. We have seen some very consistent hockey from Brock Besser while Pettersson has struggled. And so from that, you can also say, good job by Travis Green in terms of maximizing the efficiency of Brock Besser. So asking this question as a whole, is Travis Green getting the most out of his lineup right now?
I mean, one thing you can say with Pettersson is one of the big reasons for his struggles is that you consistently see when you watch him play that he's having to start off in the defensive end and be that puck carrier, like taking it out of the zone because there isn't someone else to do it. So he doesn't have that, you know, thing to build on. He's like wasting most of his energy getting it to the net. Like, so.
Yeah. And how many times a game do we see him head down, stick up, just racing back defensively, right?
Yeah. He goes. There's no one who back checks as hard. Maybe Bo Horvat to some respect, but yeah, Pettersson is like hauling ass to be defensively accountable.
Right.
I actually wonder, to talk about, you know, defensive zone face-offs or having to go back and recover, if this was an Alain Vigneault coach team, it's fair to say that Pettersson's going to get all the offensive stone starts, right? Yeah. Like it would be like Cody Hodgson's sort of manufactured ability. And that's not to, I'm not trying to compare a Hodgson to a Pettersson here, but I think if AV was coaching, we would probably see much more of that in play, whereas Willie D and Travis Green, they don't seem to be as ruthless on the matchups. One thing, though, and this is more of a question for the three of you. If the Pettersson line is scoring points, do we really care if they come off of his stick?
Yeah, and that, I think, was kind of to my point about he's still getting numbers. They're just not of the goal variety, right? Yeah. Maybe they are down a little bit, but I don't have a lot of concern, mm-hmm. you know?
No, I guess the concern would be that he's maybe dropped down in the colder rankings.
Yeah, it's still his.
I still
the
think
Calder.
He should.
Yay. Gold star
Calder rankings.
Yeah, two gold stars.
Anyway.
Yeah, that's the only concern.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's a big deal.
Moving on from the Travis Green talk to what we saw from The Athletic, and it was from Harmon Dale basically talking about how the underlying metrics, if you will, talk about how the comeback season, the bounce back season, whatever you want to call it, of Ben Hutton may be a little more over-exaggerated than we are led to believe. I won't get into the specifics of the article. You can go check it out. Again, it's at The Athletic. But if we're to believe those statistics and that the bounce back season of Ben Hutton may be a bit overblown, is anyone here looking to sell high on Ben Hutton if there's an opportunity to do so?
Absolutely.
Sure.
I mean, we know the Canucks are thin on the wing. If you can move him for maybe him and somebody else.
Goldobin?
Sure, for an upgrade on the wing for a young player,
mm-hmm.
like an actual young player, not one of these 25-year-old reclamation projects. Then I think there's tremendous value in doing something like that. Or for a high pick, right? Like, I do think there's a lot of value in moving Hutton rather than keeping him.
I don't think, given from what we've seen from Jim Benning recently, that he likes picks as much as we think he does.
I
don't think there's an appetite for him to move Hutton and or Goldobin for a draft pick. He wants players that are in that Levo range that are maybe a little bit more higher potential.
Well, there was, I don't know if it was in the Athletes or the Athletic in an article, but there was a conversation or a quote from Benning who said that the Canucks viewed a draft pick as taking 4 to 5 years to become an NHL.
Exactly.
Yeah,
the
Athletes, that's crazy.
Which is, oh my God, just the worst way to think about it. You know? I mean, you know when you get a guy like Pearson what he's going to be, and it's not going to get any better.
They only move the needle so much.
Yeah, and one, they're closer to the end of their prime, and these guys are already smack in the middle of it. Like, there's no growth there, right? So
let me ask you this question. If we're all in agreement that Jim Benning probably covets younger, further developed players than he does draft picks, would you move Goldobin and Hutton for Jesse Puljujärvi?
No.
Kyler Yamamoto.
Well, he hasn't even really played in the NHL yet, right?
But again, we're talking about more higher potential kind of players here.
I would take a Kyler Yamamoto. Yeah, he's your boy. I know that.
I don't see Jim going for that.
No, like, Jim does
that's
not.
That's like a between what
the
we're
only two
about.
Prospects he's ever really acquired were done when the expansion draft was going mm-hmm. on.
This might be a bad example because he just broke his leg, but Troy Terry from the Anaheim Ducks.
Maybe. I mean,
like these are the kind of players I think that are actually on Jim Benning's radar. I have no no sources to back up that claim. But I'm saying if you were to explore the idea of trading Nikolai Goldobin and maybe a Ben Hutton, he's looking for players in the 20 to 23 range as opposed to the 23 to 26 range that maybe have a little bit more untapped potential. Like a higher end Hunter Shinkaruk when we traded him.
No, I think he likes the 23 to 26 year olds.
He does, but I think he needs a little bit younger to grow up with the younger core.
What he does though. Yeah, that's not his move.
Yeah, what about Jared McCann? I hear he's not doing too badly. Oh, God. Oh, sorry.
Adam's going to have a breakdown.
Just another move, and
Eric Goodbranson's doing well in Pittsburgh.
No, he's not.
He's getting the Corsi minutes. Say otherwise, it's because he's getting sheltered minutes.
Yeah, I mean, you're playing with Crosby and Malkin. You're going to do okay, no matter what.
The thing about back to sort of, you know, Benning and the players he's looking for, he's not the only GM that wants that type of player. Somehow, like, really, what is it that the Canucks have available to
go? I hear there's a market for those kind of guys.
Yeah, like, what is it the Canucks have to offer? Like, the Canucks would have to overpay, so why go and do that when you can go the other direction? But I think it's as clearly as what we want. We want picks, and GM Jim Benning.
Picks and prospects are like houses. They have the potential to greatly increase in value. The guys he likes, like Pearson or whomever,
they're condos.
No, they're not condos. They're cars. You get them. They have no value, right? Like,
yeah, they just appreciate. Like
I try to think of. Any of the guys he's acquired, Goodbranson, any of those guys, right? Yeah. You sell your tradable assets, your houses, your McCanns who are now looking good, and have room to grow for Goodbransons who immediately decline in value.
So what I think they're more like condos.
Well, no, but condos have an appreciative value.
But very slow compared to houses.
Right. But I'm saying they depreciate. I'm not saying
cars don't increase in value until they retire. Like that, and that's
there's the best way to put it. A couple of minor exceptions, you know, and that most of those are too early to tell. Like Josh Levo, right? He seems like a good deal, but
that's
it's only because we had like
to use the car analogy though. What did Jim Benning do? He went out and got a car that's going to depreciate in value, but he was able to go and get it for a great price. The problem is, we're not talking about him, you know, paying, you know, a Hyundai prices for a Lamborghini here. He paid Hyundai prices for a Honda.
Right. God, I don't know cars at all, so I'm going to get lost pretty fast.
Well, I mean, you get that, right?
No, I understand. Kind
of it's just like the moves he makes don't add value to the team.
Yep.
They stagnate it or make it go down.
And what Chris was saying about how there being other GMs like that in the league, that's what would make me nervous about bringing someone in like Holland. It's just like his mentality isn't the like new wave of thinking either.
Well, but that's Holland arguably embraced the meta quite early on. The problem was that he held on to the window. Like if Holland was here during, you know,
it is tough when you have guys like Datsyuk and Zetterberg, right? And you want to you hang on to that window as long as you can.
Yeah, but he masterly took players, picks, and was able to make magic happen. Now that some of that might be their scouting team in Sweden, but if you were to go and look at, you know, I'll use Ottawa for a trash fire of a hockey team. Somehow came around to the realization that, you know what, if we got a lot of picks, there's a good chance we're going to get a couple of diamonds here.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, the tire fire is no longer in existence. The fans all love the team, maybe not the owner, and they have a new ring.
And you look at the best teams in the league, Tampa, Winnipeg, Nashville, whomever, they're built on this is obvious at this point, but they're built on draft picks and they're built on successful trades. Two things Benning has not done.
No. We got a few minutes left for a couple more things. And talking about cars that are depreciating in value, how about a car that could be headed on to the scrap heap in Roberto Luongo?
Oh, that was cold.
I know, it's very grim to say.
Let's just say that Roberto Luongo just backstopped his team to win over Stanley Cup champions, who were like 15 places above them.
So let me ask you
this. For his second win.
Okay, so like the heart says that Roberto Luongo has another year or two in him. The body doesn't necessarily say that, though. I mean, I've read stories about how it takes him 90 minutes to prepare for every single game, games that he doesn't even start. He's a backup in those games. And so maybe Roberto Luongo just says to himself that it's not worth it anymore. Tell me, like, do you guys believe that there's a chance that Roberto Luongo retires next season?
Yeah, but I don't think he would choose that.
It would be forced retirement.
Anymore. Well, yeah.
LTIR kind of thing.
Luongo has made it clear he wants to still contribute, still feels he can. And it does sound as if Luongo would be willing to accept the backup role, regardless of the 90-minute preparation. I mean, he made it quite clear that he wants the opportunity. Now, where does that opportunity present itself? I think he would go and take that role in Florida. I actually think he might go to Montreal. But do either one of those teams have a space for him? And if they don't, then, like, I look at Vancouver as an example. If there was ever an opportunity to go and get value for Markstrom, it's now.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm not trying to suggest that, you know, we're going to go and force Demko in to be the number one right away. But imagine Demko being able to balance the load with a Roberto Luongo, learn from that guy. And I don't know if Roberto would come all the way back to Vancouver. But if he doesn't go to Montreal, doesn't go to Florida, and then he is forced to retire, Capri capture. I know you get all pissed off when I talk about it.
I know.
But it's becoming more and more real. And we're talking about 4.26. So that's essentially GM Jim Benning being forced to sign a player he doesn't get access to.
Well, let me ask you this. And we do talk about cap recapture, and I don't want to talk about it too much longer. But do you believe that there's any chance that the NHL actually enforces that penalty?
Yeah,
on the
Canucks? I was going to say Jace Butchford is convinced it's not going to happen. One way or another, whether it's long-term injured reserve or the NHL stepping in, doing something
because
else.
Because that contract was legal
yeah,
at the time it was signed.
Yeah, that's the frustrating
and
thing.
And to penalize the Vancouver Canucks for something that at the time was legal does seem like it's opening up a brand new can of worms. And
right,
I believe
could make the argument that the owner signed the CBA and all that, but go on.
Wasn't New Jersey also on for a similar thing
yeah,
when Ilya Kovalchuk retired?
They didn't have to take the penalty. They, I believe, had to move down to the bottom of the draft and picked 30th that year, which doesn't sound great, and I don't see that happening to the Canucks because that happened way sooner in the contract and all this kind of stuff. But I'm kind of with Botch. I just don't see it happening.
Like I think the Canucks are willing to go to court to enforce that does not happen. Like I'm saying the U.S. Supreme Court if it has to happen.
The NHL is in a tough spot. Like, let's look at the league if they don't enforce that. I mean, they've already taken heat for how they've allowed players to go on LTIR. Hell, like, Chris Pronger's playing in a bloody, alumni game while he's still on contract in Phoenix and working for the league, but somehow his concussion is keeping him from professional play. Right?
So why, though, I feel like they won't penalize the Canucks.
No, I agree. But if the league, who has made it very, very clear about cap recapture, like this was a big deal, doesn't follow through, I think they then introduce the possibility that a GM or two, and quite possibly, or more possibly, agents, well, geez, this league, they don't follow through on what it is they say, so we're going to take advantage of that.
Right, but don't you think because it's signed post-CBA?
Well, I completely think it was asinine to begin with. Like, this was a contract that was completely legal, as Matt had said. Like, the fact that
it was a loophole, for sure, but it was legal.
But you know what? Ha-ha, fooled you. We stopped that. But by the way, we're pissed off, so we're going to go and punish the teams that actually found the loophole for us and took advantage of it. I wonder if the NHL hasn't put themselves in this weird spot, and this is the hill they go to fight on. I think, ideally, the end of the season, Luongo, you know, has a physical or something, and they say, dude needs bionic hips. And at that point, it's the saving grace, you know? The LTIR, off to the
sunset.
Well,
yeah, he could very easily fail a physical, right? So,
and then it just goes to when you're talking about Montreal and Vancouver, I don't think either of those options Louis would take. Like, he wants to stay in Florida.
I think he would
contribute
go to Montreal
to the team. I don't know if
Tampa Bay. he'd also go for.
Yeah, like, yeah, Florida, sure, other Florida teams. But I think he goes to Montreal because of Montreal. Like, Luongo has made it very clear if there was ever a team in the league he wanted to play for, it was the Canadiens.
We got a couple more minutes here, and we'd be remiss not to mention at least that the Vancouver Canucks signed a couple free agents out of college. Goaltender Jake Keeley out of Clarkson University, as well as Brogan Rafferty from Quinnipiac.
Quite a name, Brogan Rafferty.
I almost didn't get that.
Yeah, it's just so Irish.
Admittedly,
like Irish.
I have no knowledge about either player, but I do know that Jake Keeley is up for the Mike Richter Award for the best goaltender in the NCAA.
Great season, great numbers. I think he was second in wins, I believe.
I name dropped him earlier, but this is a better player than what the Canucks got when they signed Michael Gartig.
Yes, I was trying to remember his name, so I'm glad you brought it up, but he's better than him for sure.
Obviously less than Thatcher Demko, though, but
I mean, one's a draft pick for a reason,
and I would say in terms of like the depth chart, probably a lesser option than Michael DiPietro at this point.
Right,
too.
But he can go right to Utica next year and play behind DiPietro. Right?
Yeah, so
that's not a bad tandem to have.
So I would say that looking ahead to next season, Keeley is going to be somewhere in that ECHL/1B range for the Utica Comets, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I guess, what's his name? Russian name.
Oh. Ilya Kablukov? Kabanov? I forget his name.
Audi.
Remember Kirill Kabanov?
Well, considering how the goaltending was like down in Utica, and in, like, is it Kalamazoo is the ECHL team, right? They were so short for players, let alone goaltenders, it was, you know, quite sketch. But I think Bachman still... Yeah. Comes back in Utica. They like what Bachman's doing.
Devastating injury he had this year, though, wasn't it? Wasn't it like an Achilles or something?
Yeah. Okay, so let's qualify that, but a Bachman-type player.
Yeah.
Right? They'll want the steady hand to help develop whether it's DiPietro or Keeley. Speaking of goaltenders, Will Lockwood.
That's not a goaltender.
No? What is he?
He's a right winger.
Okay, whatever. He's going to Michigan. Yeah.
And quickly on Rafferty, smooth skating defenseman.
But the biggest thing is his right-handed shot.
Yes. Right-handed shot. Who can move the puck, who knows what it'll turn into, but those are valuable.
Here's the thing, like you see what they've done with Josh Tevez and now Brogan Rafferty. It's like the Canucks can sign these players out of college, these undrafted defensemen. Like for every four of them, you're hoping one of them turns out to be the next Chris Tanev. You know what I mean? Like it's strictly a numbers game, and the Canucks have that bullet in the chamber, if you will, to take that shot on a player. Why not take the shot? So.
Yeah. To go on to Lockwood, I mean, he just had such a big injury. I think that set him back massively.
But here's the thing on Will Lockwood. You always get a little nervous when they go back to college for a fourth year. Is there any concern in this room that Will Lockwood does not sign an entry-level contract with the Canucks?
There always is, like you said, when they go back for the last year. I think it'll happen. Maybe that's just my inherent bias. But even if it doesn't... I don't think it's the end of the world. I don't think we're missing too much. Yeah, I think Canuck fans are higher on Lockwood than they should be. I just don't think there's a high ceiling for him.
Yeah, I think he was exciting, but
I think people saw Gaudette and were hoping he could follow a similar path, and he looked like he might for a little bit, and it just never really materialized.
Yeah, that's what I would say. I think like once he kind of got out of World Juniors there, that really just put a big question mark over everything.
Chris, as we wrap things up here on the C4 Podcast, how about you tell people where they can find us?
Well, you're already listening to us, but before we actually wrap it up, I want to get a tank update.
Is it even a tank anymore?
Well, what, the Canucks are in what, 9th from the bottom right now?
23rd overall, yeah.
Apparently it's just make games the loss as long as possible.
It is going to be 23rd. Sweet, delicious, tasty karma when the Canucks with their 9th best odds... Get Jack Hughes.
This is the year. Going back to wins and stuff like that and expectations next year about the Canucks making the playoffs, I can't remember. Like the last 20 games, I think it is, the Canucks have won 3 in regulation or something like that. Like these one-goal games, you see it from year to year. There's so much luck and randomness that goes into it that it's so easy to lose those games, especially the ones that go to overtime or shootout, right? So... Like 3-on-3 isn't hockey. It's exciting, but it's not real hockey. And a shootout, obviously, is even further from that. So there's so much variation there. And in regulation, the Canucks still aren't a good team. So I just don't see them making that step. So I think they'll be finishing well lower than where they are now next year.
Okay, I know Chris has to close out, but really quickly, it's Luongo just quote tweeted Sportsnet's article that said Luongo's declining health could lead to the end of his NHL career.
And?
He wrote, April Fool's question mark?
Oh, what a cheeky bugger. I love him.
Oh, that's tough, though. Poor guy.
He's going to look great back in Canucks colors next year.
I want him back. I've made it very clear, and I know you go and roll your eyes at me, but I think Luongo has an opportunity to help the Vancouver Canucks get better, both by trading Markstrom while he is worth the most he has been with this organization since they picked him up, and two, I think Luongo is probably accepting the fact that he is now the mentor-style goaltender. Anyhow, as we wrap up the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, which you're listening to on CanucksHockeyBlog.com or Overtime Media, you can find us all over the interweb. That's right, we are at the C4 Podcast on Twitter. We're on Facebook.com/the C4 Podcast. We are on every podcast app known to man and or woman. And dear Lord, do we... I said this earlier, we need a GoPro camera. We're going to have to set up a live feed. Just we can put it like on Matt and Adam.
Yeah, we don't need to be on it.
Like, no. I mean, really, I think there's entertainment value there. Like, you can't see it on the podcast, and you're obviously listening to this after the fact, but these two have something special. I hate to get in between it. And, like, what the heck is Matt using his hoodie for?
It's like Vince Vaughn at the end of Dodgeball. When he puts a blindfold on.
Oh, okay. Yeah, if you can dot a red Dodgeball, yeah, I get it.
I cannot remember that.
Adam's so ugly, I have to put my hood over my
head.
I just presume you were like going all Miyagi because you know what's coming up soon.
Cobra Kai? Yeah. Next OTR?
Guys, come on, let's close this up.
Okay.
Let's go.
Whatever. I can continue talking for as long as I want.
We'll do it in OTR.
I'm in charge. But on behalf of Matt Lee at @MattLee_61, Adam Onovan and Connor at @MFOC, Anna Forsyth at @A4SAR3, and myself, Chris Golden at @LightForce, no final words from anyone else because we're out.
Thanks for listening to the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com.